Welcome to the Food Matters Live podcast, where we showcase the innovations, the big ideas, and the visionaries in the food industry. We dig deep, we look to the future and the past, and we question everything we think we know about food. I'm Anthony Zara, and this episode has been made in partnership with Wraps. Now, we're going to have some fun on this episode because we're talking about new product development, but with a real focus on genuine innovation. Think back to the times in your life when you saw something on a shelf or tried a new food that really stopped you in your tracks and made you say, wow. Maybe it even ended up disrupting a whole sector with competitors rushing to emulate the success of that particular product. The question is, are we seeing enough genuine innovation in the food and drink sector? And with me to discuss this are two fantastic guests. Layla Lawrence is the Market Development Manager at Wraps UK. Hello, Layla.
Hi, Anthony. Nice to see you.
And you. And Leo Buers is Wraps UK's business development chef. Hello, Leo.
Hi, Anthony. You okay?
Great to have you both on. Okay, Leo, maybe let's start with you. And this is an exciting topic, I think, to get our teeth into. Let's start with your thoughts on the premise of this episode then. So are we seeing much genuine innovation when it comes to NPD in the food and drink sector?
I think it's personally down to perception. I think from our side, in terms of innovation, it could be anything from packaging to cuts of protein to potentially ingredients that are included into products. But what we're not seeing necessarily is a genuine shift change in what is genuine NPD. And from our side, we are a flavor company, we are a seasoning house, and we want to generate really flavorful, innovative concepts that are genuine to the regions that they originate from. I think that's probably something that we're not necessarily seeing. We're seeing more matching, we're seeing replicating of flavor profiles across other categories, whether it be from poultry that's now transferring over to fish products. Similarly, anything that's on crisp flavors may be making its way into other categories within the retail industry. We need to understand what is next, what is innovative, why is it innovative, how is it innovative, and really give our consumers something that piques an interest. And I think that's something that we haven't necessarily seen for certainly the last couple of years.
Just following on from what Leo was saying, you know, you might go into the supermarket shelf and you might see the new label, but is it really new? It's just revamped from last year. There might have been a slight tweak in one of the ingredients, one of the weights of the packets, but really as a concept, I think we really are, I hate to say it, but regurgitating an awful lot of things from the past. And I think it as Leo as a developer and me from a marketing perspective, we really would like to see something a bit more exciting out there, and something that we can really sort of, you know, encourage and entice consumers to our supermarket shelves or restaurants or wherever outlet it may be.
Yeah. What's causing that then? What do you think's led to this situation?
From my side, commercial viability, I think, is one. I think if we look at retail specifically, a lot of it is down to these products sell. We know they sell. We know a Piri Piri sells, we know a Tandoori sells, we know a Tikka sells, we know a Katsu sells. However, is it what a consumer actually wants? We've got so much knowledge and scope in terms of how we identify our trends and how we look at food products and how we look at flavor profiles. We've got access to social media, we've got more access to travel, we've got more access to TV programs, to series on streaming platforms. There's so much that we can look at that can influence what we purchase. Yet when we go to a supermarket shelf, it's repetitive. Everything is the same, no matter what category it's in. It could be a cooked piece of fish, it could be a raw piece of fish, a frozen piece of fish. Everything is similar flavor profiles. There's nothing that's really pushing the boundaries. And yes, okay, the product sells, and yes, there's minimal food wastage. However, is that generated by safe development and not being innovative, not being disruptive? We're development teams, we should be disruptive, we should be creative, we should be pushing the boundaries. That's what our consumers want. And at the end of the day, are we just purchasing products simply because they're there?
So we're talking sort of broad picture here. I imagine within that, are we still seeing some genuine innovation? Can you think of some examples?
We're seeing some. We are seeing some in terms of flavor profiles. I think if you look a few years ago, one of the premium retailers were really disruptive with one of the ranges that they launched in terms of the Middle Eastern aspect. And they went to town with it. They went across every category from home to food to drinks. Everything fit within this one theme, in essence. We've seen the introduction of Japanese and Korean recently, and we are seeing different usages of them. We are seeing different named ingredients from certain regions. But they're being westernized. I think that's the biggest concern from my side is we go and travel to these far-reach countries. We go, lots of people traveling to Southeast Asia, Cambodia, Vietnam. They're having really authentic flavor profiles when they're there. When they come back, they want to replicate that. But what we're giving them is a westernized option of it. And sometimes, actually, let's just be genuine. Let's be innovative. Let's have really tasty, innovative products that are accessible, that are commercially viable, that are technically feasible, and really drive genuine innovation.
Look, we'll get into the details of maybe how you do that in a moment. But Leila, I wonder if we could just come to you for a second on why you think innovation is important in the food sector. Why does this matter?
I think there's sort of two parts to this topic. One, I think as an industry, we really do have a responsibility to bring the best that we can to the consumers. And that's all about sort of discovery, you know, discovering new ingredients, discovering how to improve the formulation of foods, how we process these, and really how we present them to the consumers. On the other flip side of it, obviously, is the consumer. You know, we need to feed that sort of inquisitive nature that we have. You know, even it goes back from the days of hunter-gatherer. You know, we're always looking for something new to discover. We get bored of things, you know, and we want the next thing. You know, a few years ago, we didn't really know much about fermentation. We didn't really know an awful lot about certain sort of chilies or different fungi and mushrooms. But now these ingredients are coming through. So it's really our responsibility to take these ingredients and see what we can do for them and bring them to a format that consumers want. Because I think, you know, at the end of the day, when you go out and eat, you know, it needs to be in an interactive occasion with friends or with family. It needs to bring, you know, I hate to say this, but it does need to bring joy. And I think, you know, trends and development wouldn't exist if consumers weren't, you know, willing to evolve and explore. And I think that's really, really critical when we talk about innovation.
I think if you look at innovation as well, you can see it from kind of the restaurant scene and the food markets. There are innovative concepts out there. There are restaurants that are pushing the boundaries, that are authentic, that are genuinely bringing food from other regions to our high streets. We need to be able to replicate that within in the retail world. Our consumers want it.
All right. Maybe now's a good time to talk a bit about wraps. So for any of our listeners who don't know, Leila, maybe you could give us a brief history, but and then also bring us into what the company's all about today.
Sure, absolutely. So wraps, we're a German-based family-run business in northeast of Bavaria. We were established just over 100 years ago. In fact, we had our big centenary party last year, which was great fun.
Congratulations.
Thank you. The founder was a pharmacist called Adalbert Raps, hence the name. And really his primary goal was to create seasoning blends for the meat and sausage industry using processes that really brought out the best of those herbs and spices. So be that cleaning or grinding or actually how they process them together. And really sort of the key factor that sort of underpinned his drive and his ethos was flavor. And that was really, you know, roll on to 2025. That really is still very much that sort of underpins our ethos. We supply all sectors of the food industry from meat, fish and poultry, bakery, confectionery and drinks. And primarily we supply ingredients, any ingredient for any food or drink product. So be that seasoning blends, extracts, liquids, marinades, encapsulated ingredients, functional ingredients, really anything that adds flavor and functionality. And really, I think, you know, we are driven by creating innovative, exciting blends, because I think at the end of the day, you know, taste really does matter. And it's really important for us to really bring that through. So that's just a brief outline of what we do and what we're about.
Okay. All right. Well, look, back to the topic of genuine innovation. How do you see the work Wraps does helping with that?
So I think from our side, it comes down to understanding our market and understanding our customer base. Within the UK, we have a marketing and sales office in Northamptonshire. And within that, we have a sales team. We have Leila, who looks after our marketing function. We've got a development team. We've got development facilities in the UK. So all of our developments happen within the UK and then are upscaled into the factory once launched. From that, we have hands-on experience from my side with a background in meat, fish and poultry. We've got dairy experience within the development team as well. We've just expanded our development team, so it's growing. It allows us then to have more time, more access to our customers. We'll go into factories if it needs to be. We'll go and understand your factory processes. We'll spend time in there. We'll come and support on factory trials. In terms of the innovation itself, we'll look at what's stagnating potentially within the market. That comes primarily from Layla. So Layla will understand the gaps in the market. She'll go and do that on her own feet. She won't do it from behind a screen. She'll go out to the supermarket. She'll go and trawl high street restaurant chains. It may be independent restaurant chains, street food markets. We can do that as a collective. So we'll do it as a Wrapped UK team, or we'll do it alongside our customers. And we'll take you on trawls and we'll understand your market and understand your restraints potentially. And then from there, we'll build almost a joint business plan on how we then develop products for you, what those products look like, what the commercial viability needs to be on those products. Are there any restrictions from a technical aspect? Do we need to understand any future investment potentially that's required in your processing? And really understand as well what your competitors are doing. I think sometimes as development resource, unfortunately, we get dragged into factories too much, maybe do line trials that we shouldn't necessarily be doing, and we've maybe become a little bit blinkered and we focus in on what we do on a day-to-day basis, where actually we need to go and look and we need to go and explore. From that, we'll then do a little bit of bench work. So that bench work initially will probably be done by ourselves on our own, and we'll come and present those concepts. We can work with you as well. You can come down to us. We're currently reinvesting in our development facility, so end of June this year we're investing a huge sum of money into the UK facility, which will give us a brand new customer facing area to be able to work with you, bring you in, do workshops with you, look at demonstrations with you, innovation workshops. We'll do those there. And then our day-to-day working. So we'll have better facilities to be able to facilitate our customer requests faster than we have been, to be able to be innovative, to be able to deliver really genuinely innovative, flavorful concepts. And we just really need to understand our customer. Ultimately, at the end of the day, that we can only develop what we know that you need or require, or what our consumers want. And to do that, we need to really understand it. And to understand it, we need to explore it. And to explore it, we need to get up from behind our screens, and we need to go and understand the markets, and we need to go and understand what we're eating. And also then how we can translate those into physical products. And that's the fun part. That's the bit that we do on a day-to-day basis. And I didn't get my athletic physique from not eating food. We eat plenty, we taste plenty, and we develop and we play with food. That's what we do. We're creative. We have to be creative.
I think we're really, really lucky in the UK. We're quite a small team, and that makes us really agile on our feet. Most of the work that we do is bespoke for our customers. So we work, as Leo said, really, really closely one-to-one with customers. Obviously, we've got the backing of, our German outside of the company with all the technologies and raw material sizes, etc., and manufacturing. But I think in the UK, you know, we have the space to explore and develop with our customers, and I think that's this sort of, you know, development without any constraints, which is a great position to be in.
You mentioned development without any constraints. I was going to ask you, I imagine there are some challenges with MPD. And, you know, one thing that springs to mind is the economic situation. I think we can probably still say we're in a cost of living crisis. So how does something like that marry up with trying new things at a time when, I guess, perfectly understandably, probably food manufacturers might be thinking about playing it safe?
Yeah, I think, look, we're still coming out of the back end of the C word. I don't really want to say COVID, but we are coming off the back of COVID, and it is still a looming problem for us. And from that, however, we know that our consumers are or have had more access during that time to understand and to play in their own kitchens and to cook recipes that they haven't necessarily had time to before. And there's also that element there that now we're back at work and workspaces have reopened as they have done, that we are now looking for the ultra convenience still, and we do want that convenience element, and that is also a restriction that we have to take into account. From a commercial aspect, however, we know that we want flavorful products, and sometimes flavorful products can come with costs. However, where possible, we will obviously develop to a point where that cost isn't passed on to our consumer. And at the end of the day, as development teams, that's how we have to develop. We have to have that commercial element in mind. And yeah, okay, we can be fun and we can be flavorful, but we have to have that cost element in the back of our head as well.
I mean, we are very, very lucky that we have, you know, a huge base of raw materials that we have access to. I think it's about 1,700 different raw materials. So we are able to sort of cast our net wide right across global growers, handlers, etc., to make sure that we are getting the best prices and, you know, and the best products.
Yeah, which links to my next question, which is about the geopolitical situation. So we won't get into the politics of it, but obviously there's you know, all sorts of things, issues are being thrown up at the moment with things like supply chains and stuff like that. And I guess possibly the answer to this is of how do you mitigate against that is that broad supply chain that you've got.
Yeah, and you know, we have very good forward forecasting in terms of our needs, in terms of what crops are doing, because it's not just geopolitics. Also, sometimes, you know, the weather doesn't play ball in certain countries and suddenly a crop of onions or garlic has gone. So we try and, like I said, we have contacts right across the world. So if something isn't, you know, if there's issues in one part of the world, then we can mitigate that by sourcing ingredients and spices from another part of the world.
Look, we've spoken a lot on this podcast in the past about ultra processed foods. I mean, they have whatever the opposite of a halo effect is, I think they have it. So I'd like to put a question to you that's been put to others we've had on the podcast. It's quite straightforward. Is ultra processed food inherently bad?
I think we need to sort of really look at what we mean by ultra processed food. I think that for those people in the industry, you know, we have a clear idea of all the different stages, etc. But I think, you know, consumers are very easy to jump on sort of trends and fads, if you like. And, you know, one good podcast or one good book suddenly throws everything up in the air. We need to take a step back and or give this conversation or give this topic time to be chewed out and mulled around. But I think at the end of the day, you know, there are reasons why some ingredients are in foods. And I'm sure Leo will expand on this. You know, we do need to look at safety of products. We do need to look at flavor, etc. So I think we should pause really and let this slice of obsession about whether something's ultra processed or not ultra processed calm down a little bit.
And I think also from my side, in terms of the finished product or how we process those products, I mean, you talk about ultra processed, we are food processors. That is what we do. We process food products. And to do that, unfortunately or fortunately, we have to add certain ingredients in there that do allow us to prolong the shelf life of a product. As a consumer, if you go and buy a product on the supermarket shelf, you want it to last, say it's a fresh meat product or a dairy product, you want it to last 10 to 14 days, potentially, depending on the storage conditions of that product. And for that, we need to add products in there that allow us to do that. And it's supply and demand. We have to develop these products with certain ingredients in it to, one, give us a price point that the consumer can comfortably buy that product at, that we're not wasting an obscene amount of food. Thirdly, that we give the consumer the best tasting product. None of the food products that are in food products are inherently bad. But similarly, as developers, we don't consciously put products in there that aren't necessary. That's the biggest message, is we need to look at it from an educational perspective. Every single product that we look at as ultra processed is, oh, it's this E number. It might not all E numbers are bad. It just means that the European Commission have given it a number for use in food products. That's ultimately what it is.
Also, some elements aren't just additives just for the sake of it. I mean, there are products or, you know, vitamins and nutritional ingredients that are put in there for the benefit of consumers. If you think of, you know, breakfast cereals that contain the folic acid or different vitamins, etc., that really is for the benefit of the consumer. I think the science is still not been sufficiently researched. I think this is an area that really needs to be carefully looked at. And also we need to be aware, you know, who is doing this research and who is reporting on the data that's around. So I think we need to be vigilant, and I think we just need to be careful as to, you know, how we read data.
If there are scientific proven studies that mean that we have to change products, ultimately as a manufacturing body, we have to be able to adapt and to follow those regulations. And all of our products are following regulation. We develop two regulations, whether it's set by the EU or whether it's set by Public Health England or other bodies that determine what should or shouldn't go into our products. We have to follow those guidelines. And there are stringent guidelines that are worked on in the background that we follow on a day-to-day basis.
Great. Okay. All right. Let's talk, if it's okay, a bit about trends and insights, because I know RAPS is proud of the work it does in this area. So Leila, what can you tell us about the work that goes on there?
So for us, it's all about building data blocks of the world of food around us. I mean, like many companies, you know, we do analyze the qualitative and quantitative data that's out there, looking at the key global trends. But I think where we differ is in our agility to anticipate developments and the directional changes in consumer habits and how they interact with foods. We really do pound the streets. We're always looking at what's new, not just what new restaurants or what new cuisines are out there, but also what's closed down, what's not working anymore. We look at how consumers interact with food. Are they sitting? Are they standing? You know, we've seen a huge increase in, if you like, handheld food, not just the sandwich, with the whole TikTok sandwich craze, but also different innovative bread style products. We also look at the settings that consumers might be in. We're quite experience led. So it's all about the occasion. It's about sharing food with our friends, with our family. And so we look at all those common themes to pull out, okay, so what are the up and coming cuisines? Are there any specific ingredients within there? What are the different formulations? Is it on the meat? Is it on the sauce? Is it on the bread? And also within all of that, it's the price points. I think in the past, if you go to a restaurant or somewhere like that, it's very much, you know, you get the menu and it's starter, main course, dessert. Now it's all very much about, it'll be sharing small plates, larger plates. And I think for consumers, it's really all about experiencing all those different flavors and textures, within a meal setting with friends and with family.
Great. Can you share any insights with us today? What are consumers after? What trends are you seeing at the moment?
The key trend everywhere is, of course, we always have this, we're always bound by our financial constraints. But within that, or beyond that, should I say, I think we've seen sort of two key things. You know, today we hear a lot about the health of the body and the mind, and we look at ways to fuel this interest, you know. And again, you know, consumers do have a tendency to swing a little bit. You know, a few years ago, it was all about, it's got to be low fat, it's got to be low sugar. Now it's all about protein. And I think, you know, moving forward, it will be more about fiber and more about personalized meal creations. And not just really from a scientific point of view, as in, you know, I'm trying to eat lion's mane for my memory, or I'm having this protein for my joints, but really about all the different formats and ways I can eat things, you know, to fill in those 2-3 meals a day, or whether I'm more of a grazer, or whether I'm more of an independent eater, or whether I'm an eater with family. So I think it's looking at all the different formats of meals. And also, I think on the other hand, another thing that we're seeing very much coming through to the fore is food's got to be exciting. You know, we've got to enjoy it. You know, we're enjoying it with friends and family. It's really become an occasion. And I think at the end of the day, it really is about creating and offering, you know, the best flavour and the best tasty, exciting dishes and meals we can.
Excellent. Look, I guess it's one thing knowing what consumers want based on what's available to them in, say, in a specific country, for instance. You spoke about pounding the streets and getting away from behind the screen and actually going out and seeing these things. I wonder if you could elaborate a little bit more on how much work goes into, you know, discovering new flavours, cuisines, even eating habits from around the world.
So I think from our side, I think Leila touched on it briefly in terms of we are those oddballs that sit in restaurants and sit and watch what people are doing. We'll sit and watch what people are ordering. We'll order what we want, and we'll see what's potentially the most popular dish, or we'll speak to waiters or waitresses that are working in those restaurants, and we'll understand from their menu what is a top pick, I guess, from that menu, and understanding why and how that's served, and potentially then order it as well and try it again. It would be rude not to. So I think from our side, we enjoy eating, we enjoy food, and we enjoy that aspect. A lot of my holidays, and I guess Layla's holidays as well, involve around food. As food businesses, I think it's important to be able to deliver a food culture. We have a snack table in our office. That snack table is regularly full of treats, of random treats, weird and wonderful treats as well. Some better than others. Some get removed from the office quite quickly if they're fairly potent. But we will sit and try them, and we will eat them, and we'll discuss those products.
I think it's also about being creative. If you've seen an interesting dish, or you've traced an interesting dish, it's looking at some ingredients that we know would translate well in a different format, for example, or a different protein or a different setting. So there's an awful lot of discussion. There's an awful lot of throwing ideas around. You know, some are quite wacky and don't always work. But, you know, I think, you know, we are constantly brainstorming. We are constantly out there looking for new things. You know, we both challenge each other as well. You know, I might find something, a raw ingredient in a supermarket somewhere bizarre, and I will send it to Leo and say, hey, can you make this out of it? Or what's stopping us doing this? And it's something that we, you know, we love sharing with our customers. And it's sort of pushing, again, it's pushing those boundaries, but making sure that the flavor and the format really do deliver and work.
And I think we also have to, as a creative department from the marketing and category perspective, as well as the MPD, the sales team have to be involved, or the technical function have to be involved. We all work in food because there was something that drew us towards a career in food. And ultimately, or generally, that should be a love for food. And for that, we need to encourage people to go out and eat. We need to encourage people to try new cuisines. I think one thing, certainly from a marketing and a development perspective, is we have to question why. When we're in a creative function, we have to question why we're doing something. Why is that ingredient in it? Why is it that flavor profile? Why is the consumer eating it like this? What does the consumer want? And I think one thing that doesn't work within being genuinely innovative is the old adage of, well, that's the way it's always been done. If we work with that mindset, we end up with over-indexed products and flavor profiles that we are currently across multiple categories, that actually there may be a better alternative, and the consumer may buy another product that is innovative or is a different flavor profile. And we shouldn't be stagnant in our approach. We need to be innovative, we need to drive forward, and we need to understand what our consumers want and where that's coming from and what's driving it. And we have access to food outlet sources, media, TV programs, series, cookbooks, magazines. Food is everywhere. And sometimes it can be taken influence from there. We do see from a retail perspective that we have had briefs for bits that we have seen on TikTok or Instagram. But sometimes that can be a trend, and it can be a two-week trend. It can be a short-lived affair. Whereas actually the long-lived affair ultimately is that we want to explore. We want to eat good food. We want to have flavorful food. We want to have something that brings us joy. It might be nostalgic, it may be joy because it tastes great, it might be joy because it gives you fond memories of somewhere that you've traveled or eaten before. And I think that's something that we need to continue to do as foodies. And I think to do that, we need to be innovative.
Wraps is going to be appearing at the Food Matters Live event in October in Ascot. It would be great to hear a bit more about what you'll be doing there. So what do you have planned?
I think you've probably heard quite a lot through this podcast about flavor and taste. I think one thing is certain, that visitors coming to our suite, we're going to experience a whole load of flavor and taste, and I think that's probably as much as we're willing to reveal at the moment.
I'd certainly come with empty bellies. I think that would probably be the best option.
We'll sneak you in there, Anthony.
Thank you. Excellent. Layla Lawrence and Leo Buers, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. That was such a great conversation.
Thank you.
No, thank you for having us.
So we've been talking about the Food Matters Live event there, where Wraps will be. It's taking place on October 8th and 9th at the incredible Ascot Racecourse. If you visit foodmatterslive.com, you can register your interest in attending. It's not to be missed, so make sure you do register in plenty of time. I hope you enjoyed this episode made in partnership with Wraps. And thank you so much for listening. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Food Matters Live podcast. We've got some exciting news to share about more live events this year. We're heading to Ascot in October and Dublin in November. And for the first time, we're hosting an event in mainland Europe. In September 2025, we'll be in Rotterdam. Join us as we inspire the future of food. Learn more and sign up at foodmatterslive.com. And we look forward to seeing you there.